deep field in front. He's got some company though in cahoots, and Drefontaine are going with him. Deep field only a neck. Drefontaine on the outside in cahoots, can't reach them. Deep field responding well to Dwayne Dunn. Drefontaine's going to make him earn it, but deep field gets in three quarters to Drefontaine.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Trainer's Hut. I'm Todd Blum, your host here in the Sports Thought Studio. He's very excited for this episode today, episode 11. I'm joined by Bruce Slade a little later here in The Trainer's Hut. We're having a chat. It's been a big week for Newgate Farm. Bruce, of course, being the director of stallions there at Newgate and previously was the general manager before he just took a little sidestep there in Newgate to launch his own venture, which we'll have a chat with him about, Kestrel Thoroughbreds. It's certainly an operation on the up. We'll touch on that later. But Deep Field, gee, the week's been all about him. There was this big build-up to Northern Meteor, his sire, who had 80 winners as a record for the second season sire. And Deep Field was just edging closer. And he equaled it on Saturday, being the 11th of July. And everyone thought, how fitting is this? He's equaled the sire, and the sire had big, big raps. As we know, we've spoke to Andrew Baddock on the show previously, and we spoke a lot about Northern Meteor and the impact he's having through his son, Zoostar, and Deep Field. But on the Sunday, hit the high note for Paul and Peter Snowden, aptly named as well. They just took over the record there of Australian winners, so it's not including his Hong Kong winners and South Africa, New Zealand as well, so he's certainly doing it all over the world. And it's a real feather in the cap for the team there at Newgate because they're a young farm. They've come in a big, big way, Henry Field and his team. They've been the home of young, exciting stallions and Deep Field, who they backed. They backed him in, and he stood for 22,000 first season, so he's done it off his own bat, really, and the support of the breeders, but it's a big feather for Newgate Farm because they now have this stallion that is a real headline act, and he's going to really attract and upgrade a lot of mares, and that's all you can ask as the stud farm. So excited to touch on that. So let's head to him now, and joining me on the line here in the Trainer's Hut, the director of stallions at Newgate Farm, Bruce Slade. Bruce, thanks for joining me on the show.
Yeah, thanks very much, Todd. Looking forward to this, mate. I really appreciate you having me on.
It's been a very big week for the farm. Deep Field, he's the headline act up there at the farm now. He's just strutted into that role nicely, and he's knocked off the old man, Northern Meteor, for most wins as a second-season sire with nothing less than 81 winners, and we've still got a little bit to go of the season, Bruce.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. He's doing a super job, you know, for a young farm like ours, Todd. It's just so important, you know, to, I suppose, just build that brand of being a stallion-making farm. The likes of Arrowfield and Coolmore and Godolphin have sort of been there and done that and produced stallions. And as a young farm, you just sort of want to have that reputation of, you know, being a little bit lucky, selecting good stallions, attracting the right sort of mares from the right sort of breeders that raise in the right way. That then, you know, assist them and going on to be leading stallions. And I think, I think we had a real star on our hands, mate. I honestly think it's just the beginning. I think his weight of winners is impressive, obviously, and to set an Australian record, beating Northern Meteor's record. I think he's up to 84 winners, actually, as of today. And today, the 17th of July. So, you know, he's going enormous. But the big thing with that, it's not just winners, you know, it's a really high quality to his winners as well, Todd. Like, you know, going into the season, we sort of had COVID hit, and we sort of in that position where he was at $40,000 last year plus GST for a service, having doubled from the previous year from 2018. You know, and just with COVID hitting and everything, we thought, geez, can we put this horse up again? Because the problem we have with him, mate, more than anything, is that he's just been smashed every year, and he's been oversubscribed every year, and he's had to cover big numbers, and we just wanted to sort of get the price to a point where we sort of slowed demand down a bit and just wanted to cover a nice sort of 180, 190, 200 mares max. So we put them up to $50,000 and had a little bit of, not negative market reaction, but a bit of sort of few people thought we were being a bit tough in the times. But I suppose, I suppose the important thing was, you know, for us, we sort of dig a little bit deeper in the data, and with this horse, you sort of realise that he's firing 28%, 90 plus rate is mate for us. That means sort of like a metro Saturday class, Melbourne, yep. Sydney sort of horse, and that's really high end. Like that's the best in the country. Schnitzel and Vinny on that figure running at about 32%. Exceeding Excel's about 31%, somewhere around there, and this horse is running at 28% with his oldest crop, you know, having just turned three and halfway through their 3-year-old year at the stage. So, mate, I think what's really exciting is, you know, he's got a bunch of really lightly raced 3-year-olds in Australia here that have shown sort of proper metro Saturday City class sort of form and performance, and that'll hopefully convert as they turn four, and that'll convert into more stakes success as well. And you know, we're seeing a little bit of that in Hong Kong through his colts now too.
You mentioned the stud fee there, and when Newgate's stud fees were announced, I tweeted that I thought that the team had pretty much hit the nail on the head. And I had a really good chat with Seamus Mills on this show a couple of weeks ago, and stud fees were a topic. So if anyone hasn't heard that, I suggest they go back and have a listen, because Seamus had some really good ideas. But how important was it for like yourself as the standing director and the team there at Newgate to, I suppose, price these horses really competitively without undercutting yourself, I suppose?
Oh, mate, it's vital, you know, like, if we don't have the support of breeders and we don't sort of have their long-term interest at heart, mate, you just don't survive, and that's how the game, you know, we rely on those breeders to be in the market and supporting us, and we can't get stallions off the ground by ourselves. You know, it just takes an astronomical amount of resources. So, yeah, I think you've got to be very mindful of your service fees and just in thinking, you know, where that the progeny of that cover might be in 3 years and what they might be averaging at the sale, and try and work out a position where, you know, hopefully there's a lot of blue sky and, you know, for breeders, if it's a sort of stallion in their punt year, by that I mean their sort of second, third, fourth season before they have runners.
Yeah.
And then for the proven horses, I mean, there's a bit more information to work with, right? We knew Deepfield had averaged $150,000 all told across the yearling sales this year, the good, the bad, the ugly, which was a massive result, you know, given they were coming off his 20 grand fee in his third season, where he actually covered probably his lowest quantity and lowest quality book of mares, and sort of was equaling sort of So You Think and Pierrot and those sort of horses,
yeah.
With his average yearling price. So we sort of just thought to ourselves, based on that, you know, from a commercial point of view, breeders could still do very well off a 50 grand fee, and they've done super well all the way through, right? From those people that have followed them through from the 20 grand fee to the 50 grand fee, it's just absolutely cleaned up. And, you know, it's just important to get to a point now where we could slow up demand a little bit, and hopefully, you know, by staying at $50,000, it just takes him to another position in terms of the quality of mare he receives, the respect he garners in the marketplace. And we're seeing this year, you know, instead of getting the nice, you know, running half sister to the breeder's good mare, we're getting the good mare, you know. And I think that'll shine through in results from going forward. You know, the quality of mare he's going to cover over the next couple of seasons is going to be a little bit higher than he has covered previously.
And when you say it like that, it's pretty scary, isn't it? Because it's like you say, if you've bred a horse to him, whether you're breeding to go to the sales, there's been plenty of breeders that have made a very nice return on their initial investment. And if you breed to race, well, you said that he's averaging 28% for a 90-plus rater, so he's doing it at both ends, really, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly, man. That's everything, isn't it? You know, another big thing, Todd, as you'd know from a commercial perspective, is just nailing a commercial type. The great thing about him, he was Northern Meteor's highest price first crop yearling himself, right? Bought at Easter by Mr. Alan Bell and Amanda Christian from Kiora Stud, and he just passes on those good looks to his foals. So from a breeder's point of view, like, you're stumping up a bit more money, but he's a horse that gives you a lot of confidence that you're going to get a nice sales type, as well as the race horse, you know, and it's important to convert that sort of commercial aspect on the way through.
Just take us back to the start, Bruce, with he came to Newgate off the track, as you said, raced by Mr. Alan Bell, and won some really nice races. He didn't get that elusive Group 1, though. But what were some of the things that really attracted Newgate and urged the farm to go hard after him as he didn't get that Group 1?
Yeah, mate, I think, to be honest, I was a bit of a passenger in the whole thing, mate. Obviously, I think he excited everyone and every stud farm. And I can imagine Alan Bell through stats 4-7 had every stud bastard in the land hanging off his coattail and wanted to shout him a bit at the races while he was going at the time. We all wanted him. Obviously, he was winning races by massive spaces. He's winning one of his maiden by 5 and absolutely donkey licked them. He broke a course record. He broke a track record, a track record and a race record, and just winning by big margins. And it was just a super fast horse. You know, everyone watches a lot of races. There's a lot of races in Australia every day, and then you see that special performance, and you sort of put 5 of those performances together, and you can just tell he had a bit of X factor to him. On top of that, being by a top stallion in Northern Meteor, he was Daniel Free from a very, very good family, of course, that 8-carat family going back. So, Cody Healy House and Daniel in command, his family, so a stallion-making family too. So, mate, he was on everyone's radar, and then he sort of just tapered off on his form a bit, when it got to that sort of Group 1 level, he had a few things sort of working against him that we sort of knew about in the background, but at the same time, when they start getting beat, everyone starts to second guess themselves, I suppose, particularly when Alan and Mr. Christian were so strong on the price they wanted, at the time. For a horse that stood at 20 grand, he was a 5 or 6 year deal, a 5 or 6 multiple, as we call it, and that's getting to very dangerous territory if you buy him and find that the market doesn't believe in the horse as much as you do, or if you buy him and you work out that he's not as fertile as you'd hope, or all those kind of things. So thankfully, mate, Henry pulled the trigger. He had a strong belief. And so did the shareholders, obviously, Gavin Murphy, SF Bloodstock, and Matthew Samblom, and a couple of China Horse Club and Yarraman Park and Crestfield all came in for small shares as well. And, they secured a good stake in the horse. Alan Bell and Kiora stayed in for a big chunk. And he was just an amazing horse. He was just off the charts popular and covered a record 257 mares in his first year. And that laid the platform for obviously the huge weight of winners he's getting now, which is why I sort of hark back to, it's he probably should be getting a weight of winners given the numbers he covered. But the key for us is that he's striking at a very high rate of metro class winners, which we think is important. Yeah,
absolutely. We'll move on to a couple of the new stallions that were announced this year, Bruce. And as director of stallions there at Newgate, we'll start off with Cosmic Force, who's the first son of Deep Field to head to stud, and again, he's pretty attractively priced at the 16,500, being a 7-length winner of the Pago Pago at 2, and then come back to win the Group 2 Roman a Consul at 3.
Yeah, mate, I love this horse. I just think he's, Deep Field all over again. He did some special things in races, and I suppose we've taken the view in our roster that we're not necessarily, we're looking for Group 1 elite performers, Todd, but they don't necessarily have to have won their Group 1 race. I sort of feel like you have Group 1 winners that were probably genuine Group 2 or Group 3 winners, and you have Group 2 winners that were maybe genuine Group 1 horses, and I think this horse was very much that. Through the time data that we used through Daniel O'Sullivan, through the fact that, he won the Pago by 7 lengths, I think was a group winning 2-year-old record in terms of winning margin across all group 2-year-old races in Australia over the last decade, broke a race record in the Roman Consul, beating Microphone and Castle Vecchio. So, mate, on his day he was dynamic. The market and the professional punters are very smart operators, as you know, and he started favouring the Golden Slipper and was amongst the favourites in the Coolmore, of course, too, and started a hot favourite in the Galaxy. Obviously got rolled on each occasion, but mate, he's good looking. I genuinely believe he had Group 1 ability. We had a couple of other horses that wore our colours at the races that won Group 2 races in the same crop, and they don't stand with us. You know, they stand elsewhere. This is a horse that we believe was top class, and he's a horse that we're going to put our resources behind and make sure he gets every opportunity to sort of showcase that, or give him every chance to make a success at start, obviously, mate. You know?
And I think he's going to be another one. Like you mentioned about Deep Field, he didn't get that Group 1, but he, you know, he ran in all the right races and performed on race day. I think this horse is another one like that where the breeders that get in early are really going to be rewarded, because if Cosmic Force does win, you know, a Golden Slipper or a Coolmore, then no one's going to send a mare to him for 16,500. It's going to be astronomically more. So it's a really, really good value for the breeders, and especially with like Deep Field's fee going up, this is significantly cheaper, but the same sire line, bloodline, and the same sort of racetrack performance as well.
Yeah, no, I just love the commercial play, particularly in the times, you know, when people are looking for a bit of value. 15 grand, I just see people, you know, nailing a really nice commercial result. Because, like Deep Field too, mate, he's a good-looking horse. He was purchased by Henry, and obviously Michael Wallace from the China Horse Club from the crop of Deep Fields and that first crop, and they picked him out as the best Deep Field on type. And, you know, if you can just throw that same sort of look into his foals, I think he has a good amount of mark or respect as a ratio to what he's standing for, and I think you'll find he'll outsell a service fee by 5 or 6 or 7 times, and that'll be a nice result for Greg that decided to use him this year, you know?
Absolutely. And Brutal's new to the roster as well, but the horse I want to touch on as well, Bruce, is Tassort, because he's a very interesting one. Again, he was a very talented 2-year-old and was an early favourite for the Golden Slipper. But he raced for Cadolphin, and I believe they're still going to support him as a stain, and Emirates Park are involved in him as well. So, again, another group of really good breeders getting behind a stallion at a really attractive price of $11,000.
Yeah, for sure, mate. Like, again, he's a horse that, you know, we've identified through time data, essentially. And just in his debut, did a very special thing. Ran a 103 on Daniel's ratings, which for us is, you know, hasn't been done since sort of capitalist, I think Estajab, Extreme Choice, there might be one other, that sort of achieved that in Australia over the last decade. So we thought he was very special on debut, and obviously at the time thought we were in a lot of trouble, because he was obviously owned by Godolphin and raced in the Royal Blue, and we never thought he'd stand at Newgate, obviously, but you know, things didn't go to plan after that. Injury curtailed his career. But, you know, we just thought he was a very interesting horse when Emirates Park put him up to us. I mean, I think we all in our team, and as we found going forward, a lot of breeders just remember that debut as being a little bit special, just to the eye, and then the time data matched it. And then when you add in the fact that he's, you know, a grandson of I'm Invincible, he's by Brazen Bow, he's doing a great job. And then his mother's a blue hen, you know. She's the dam of Aswaria, the dam of Elite Say and Astern. So he's a half to those two top-line horses. And, you know, when we're sort of joining the dots here, along with James Cummings and James McDonald, just sort of, you know, talking very highly of the horse and believing he was a top-class, talented sort of athlete as well, we just thought, you know, this is a horse that we can bring in at a nice low figure, involve a lot of breeders, and give ourselves a decent shot of you know, making an important stallion based on those things, mate. So, very interesting horse. And another interesting thing about him, mate, is we've done this breeding right deal on him where basically if you send a mare first year at $10,000 plus GST, and you send a mare second year to him at $10,000 plus GST, you then earn yourself a lifetime breeding right in the horse, so a service every year for free beyond, you know, season three and beyond. And I think you'll find a lot more studs and breeders will be taking this option up going forward. I think it's going to be a terrific thing for small to medium breeders in that, you know, they can get in, support a horse, and then share in the upside of their groundwork and their graft work to help make the stallion succeed, and share in the long-term spoils, you know. So that's been really popular. That's amazing. We've had over 80 people take up that option, which I think says a lot about the horse's profile. And I think everyone sort of just gets that little bit of a gypsy feel about him. You know, he's pretty special.
Yeah, that's an excellent initiative. That's a really good idea, especially in the current climate. Just, I suppose, like you say, the breeder is the most important. Without the breeder, the stud doesn't exist. So it's good just to give that little bit back, and it brings people along for the ride as well, which part of what Newgate is it's such a good team of people that have brought the farm to where it is today in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, mate, I think that sort of long-term approach is the key. And I mean, obviously, there's a lot of really good farms and good people, and, you know, it's a close-knit industry, mate, isn't it? And I tell you what, there's nothing more, there'd be nothing more to us than to roll out in 5 years' time with 80 tassel breeding right holders, and he's the next Arm Invincible, and he's, you know, generating $30 million a year, and small to medium breeders are able to, you know, sell their noms or sell their breeding rights for north of 200k. I mean, that's the kind of thing that can change people's lives, and mate, that would bring us a hell of a lot of joy. So if we can just, you know, if we can look after people along the journey, I think that sort of play where you're paying 2x10 service fees, you can trade out of that position pretty quickly. So long as you're breeding a decent mare and you're raising the horse properly and presenting them well at sale, you can trade out of that pretty quickly and have a nice, you know, piece of the long-term upside, and you can just sort of sit back and hopefully, you know, it doesn't cost you anything then to sit on that breeding right or use it or sell it. And hopefully, mate, you know, in time, we can have a big result for a lot of small breeders.
It certainly is exciting stuff for the farm going forward. We'll move on now, Bruce. You've been at Newgate since 2015, and previous to that was 5 years as the bloodstock manager for Gay Waterhouse. And through your experience on both sides of the industry at stud and racing level, you've launched Kestrel Thoroughbreds. Tell us a bit about what that's about.
Yeah, Kestrel, I suppose, mate, it's basically a consultancy company, and I basically set it up. I just got to the point where I sort of wanted to have something of my own and sort of be the master of my own ship a little bit and have a crack again at running my own business and, you know, tying that in with, you know, I've got two young boys now and a little daughter on the way, so tying in a bit of lifestyle to see if I could get that balance right. And we decided to move up here to the Gold Coast to the beach, and it's probably somewhere similar where we'd like to retire in time. And we just thought to ourselves, well, why don't we have a crack at trying to, you know, rather than waiting till we're 60 and live by the beach, why don't we try and make it work now? Mate, it's still a work in progress, you know. Like like we all are, mate. I you know, I'm a big I love reading these self-improvement books and those kind of things, and it's just one of these things where this journey sort of taken me to throw myself into a position where we're maybe a little bit less comfortable financially, but, you know, some other parts of this new gig sort of working well with my family life now and the lifestyle we want to live, so a healthy sort of aspect we're really trying to take on. So I'll let you know how it goes in a few years' time, mate, but so far, so good. Newgate's been incredible. I've been able to stay on with Newgate. Obviously, I was based in Scone as a general manager initially for the first 5 years, and now I've stepped to the side and taken over the Stallion director's role with a great team there, selling the Stallion nominations and sort of handling the Stallion sort of acquisitions and share sales, etc.
Yeah.
And then it's also allowed me to sort of dabble in the racing again. You know, I really enjoyed my time at Gays. The racing side of the whole business is really interesting. No, I just enjoy it, mate. As you know, it's sort of part of the big circle of the whole game, isn't it? You know, and I love the winning post. You know, like, it's a great game. It's such an objective game. Whether you be a breeder, an agent, a trainer, a jockey, you get to the winning post first, and that's the be all and end all, and that's where all the value's derived. And you know, I just enjoy the whole process of trying to find the next future stars of a stable, and the stars of the stable doesn't mean they have to be the Melbourne Cup winner. They obviously stars for many different reasons, but also then, you know, the whole sales aspect and engaging the audience and really servicing clients well through a racing stable is something that, you know, I've learned a lot from Gays, and hopefully I can pass on some of that knowledge to some other stables. And I've joined up here with Toby and Trent Edmonds at the Gold Coast, been here since November, and it's just been terrific, mate. They've been really, they've really welcomed me with open arms. They've been just so hungry to, you know, win and keep improving, and we've really got on well, and they've had a terrific season. Nothing to do with me, by the way, but they've had a great season, and it certainly made my job a lot easier in terms of, you know, getting the new yearlings and the new group of horses into the stable that hopefully will set the foundation for future stable success going forward. So at the moment, mate, I'm wearing two hats, the Newgate hat and the Edmonds Racing hat, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised you went back to the racing side, to be honest, Bruce, because just before, it might have been a couple of years before you went to Newgate, you launched Round Table Racing and the syndication company there through, you're obviously working at Gaze. And then Henry gave you the old hip and shoulder and said, just jump across and come work for Newgate. So just as it was all sort of about to launch off, you sort of had to close it up and head to Newgate. So I suppose it's good to get that taste again for your own business and along that line as well.
Yeah, it was a great learning time, mate. I really mean that. Like, I had a terrific time at Gaze. It was just an incredible time with some amazing horses there, mate, while I was there, you know, with winning Melbourne Cups and Caulfield Cups and three slippers, and just an incredible time. European horses coming in and winning big races for us, and yearlings were selected winning big races, and then homebreds from Guru and Strawberry Hill. It was just an incredible time with incredible horses. And, you know, I jumped into the Round Table Racing role there for a year, and we bought a lot of horses quickly, and mate, more than anything, to be honest, I was just under the pump, probably out of my depth a bit. I didn't feel like we let anyone down, but I just sort of got to the point where it all became too much, really, was the truth of it. And so when Henry tapped him on the shoulder, I was sort of ready to jump, so to speak, mate. So it wasn't quite, that's the truth of it. So, that was a very good lesson. Now sort of taking it on my belt, I do think that's something we need to get on top of in the game. I think there's a lot of risk taken on by trainers and agents and syndicators with regard to buying horses and trying to sell them down. And you know, the financial pressure and the risk and everything that comes with that. So, you know, it's trying to work out a way to redesign this thing a little bit where we can take that risk off the table and hopefully, secure horses in a more sort of safe and enjoyable manner. Mostly through an engaged audience, mate. That's what I just believe in. You know, if you look after people, give them a great experience, plenty of information, lots of visual content, race tips, great insights into the stable, I think you get an engaged audience that wants more and is enjoying their experience. And I just find that, you know, you can really, it's selling is sort of, you know, a derivative of just great service, essentially, you know?
Yeah, and because I wasn't a client of Round Table Racing, but I was a subscriber to the newsletter, and I actually used to really look forward to getting the email on the Friday, because it had a couple of stories, and it had the ads for horses that were available for syndication, but it wasn't a big just buy this, trying to throw it in your face. You know, there was a few racing stories, and Natasha, your wife, had the fashion section as well. So it's like you say, just content for someone who wasn't necessarily a client, but the more people that are interested by that, the more chance you are of attracting them as a client in the future.
For sure, mate, absolutely. Trying to add value and enjoyment and fun and something that people get excited about every week. And it's the same as your podcast, mate. You know, like, this is so good. I really enjoyed listening to Seamus the other day. I just think these kind of platforms are so good. And for you, you know, being able to not only pick people's brains and get them on, but also, you know, just engage an audience and give them something to further education or further interest in the sport. Is just such a great thing, and I really appreciate you putting this all on and doing this all, mate. I know it's not it takes time and effort, but I'm sure I'm sure in time you'll look back at this as being a really important moment, in the Todd Blunt bloodstock history.
Yeah, absolutely. It's some kind words there. Before I let you go, Bruce, you've been very generous with your time, though. You mentioned Melbourne Cup winners. Before, you've had a couple of Melbourne Cup runners, Excess Knowledge, who was a bit of a favourite of mine when he was running, and True Blue was a Northern Hemisphere 3-year-old, both with Gay. Just explain to us a bit about Melbourne Cup Day as an owner.
Yeah. Mate, my Melbourne Cup Day is normally spent trying to work out a way to pole vault owners into the owners. Because you normally have not that many owners and tickets for the mounting yard and a lot of owners to try and get these horses bought and secured. No. But, mate, we had a great time at the Melbourne Cup. Like, we were there every year with Gail. Obviously, one of those things she wanted to win. And we're very lucky to be there with, you know, Glen Caddam Gold and Tullamore and Descarado and plenty of sort of horses, you know, through the years. And then, obviously, while I was there, we secured with James Harron Fiorente from Europe as well, obviously a son of Monson. And he came over and ran second first up and then won the next year. And that was just just sensational and a very special time. But obviously through that, my appetite to sort of have my own colours in the races came about. And my first ever horse I syndicated was a horse called Trey Blue out of France with a round table racing colours. And let's just say, mate, it wasn't... It was nice having a runner, but he was sort of gone at the 800-metre mark and they'd led the race out and then sort of petered out. And I mean, just the pressure of the day got to me so much in the mounting yard with the owners and things that my nose just started bleeding out of both nostrils. I couldn't stop it, you know. I just felt the pressure so much. Just wanting to perform well, you know. And that was actually Tommy Berry's first ever Melbourne Cup ride. He had a nice low weight and Tommy was riding for the stable at the time. So it was nice to, you know, do that with Tommy, but... Anyway, not the right result. And then the next horse we purchased was a horse called SF Knowledge. So he had very similar form to Fiorente. It was by the same stallion. It just made a lot of sense for him to be bought by us. As it turned out, you know, he just wasn't quite he wasn't the weight for age horse that Fiorente was. But he was a really, really tough, good stayer. Who obviously won the Lexus and the lead-up, you know, the week before, or the Saturday before the Tuesday, had to survive the longest protest of all time.
I had to go through that protest with my ticket as well, Bruce. You weren't the only one.
You know how they say, like, the longer you have to wait, the worse trouble you are? Because we've won the race, obviously, Dwayne Dunn. There was definite grounds for a protest, and obviously we'd hoped that, you know, we'd done enough to win, and thankfully the stewards agreed in the end, you know, and it was literally the difference between having a start in the Melbourne Cup or not, so that meant a ton. And he ran super, mate. Like, he drew really wide in both Melbourne Cups. He, like, drew, like, 21 and 22, I reckon, the 2 years he ran, and both times, therefore, he sort of had to lead or take a fourth position, and, you know, there's one time there where he actually, I think he ran sixth or seventh from memory, but yeah, I led them up and had a really good soft run in transit. Kieran McAvoy rode him and they gave him a peach, and anyway, in the end he wasn't good enough, but he was leading up until the 200 metres, mate, and I tell you what, there was plenty of excitement. That was very, very exciting. So I sort of feel like I've Melbourne Cup's been super good to me. I trying to work out how to win it nowadays is a bit more difficult. Those European horses have just become so much more expensive, and the Lloyd Williams, Nick Williams systems up there are just unbelievable, as with Australian bloodstock teams. So they're just so well placed and equipped to nail those horses so early now at big numbers that, they're hard to beat, but it doesn't mean it can't be done by others, obviously. And it's pretty cool last year to see a horse, bred and raised in Australia, winning the Melbourne Cup last year was pretty cool too.
Absolutely. It was a real positive for the Australian industry, wasn't it?
Couldn't agree more.
Bruce, thank you very much for coming on the show, mate. I appreciate you taking the time, and you've always been very generous with your time to myself. So thanks again, and all the best with Kestrel Thoroughbreds and the young family and everything else in the future, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. Thanks very much for putting this podcast together for the industry, mate. And look forward to listening to many future star guests on the show going forward, and we'll catch you at a sale very soon, mate.
Bruce Slade there, joining me in the trainer's hut. He's always a very good man to have a chat to, Bruce. Very knowledgeable, a lot of experience in the industry, both the racing and breeding side. If you need to get in touch with Bruce in regards to anything with Newgate Farm or his bloodstock consultancy business, you can get in touch with him by heading to his website, kestreltheroughbreds.com.au. You'll be able to find his email and contact number there. And I suggest you jump on the website and just have a bit of a look about what the Kestrel Thoroughbreds is about. It's a great idea, and I'm really behind the idea. I think it's going to be a very big success. Just like everything else, Bruce has sort of been involved in the racing industry. He's played a very integral part to Newgate Farm, and they're really starting to see the fruit of that at the moment with Deep Field and what he's doing as a stallion. And it's only going to get more and more exciting as he goes on. And the couple of young ones that we mentioned there as well, the freshman stallions, plus Capitalist, Extreme Choice, and their yearlings have gone through the sale ring, and or their two-year-olds, they're coming up, and Dissident's sort of starting to hit his straps as well amongst other stallions there on the roster at Newgate. But that's it for this week's episode of The Trainer's Hut. If you've been enjoying the show, let me know. Get in touch with me. You can find me on Twitter at Todd Blum Bloodstock, or you can search on Facebook or Instagram at SportThought, which is, of course, the website that we bring the podcast to through, sportthought.com.au. And the website there has got the sports blog and a couple of other podcasts you'll have access to if you jump on there. And this show can be found on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from. Just follow and subscribe, and then you'll keep up to date with the shows as they go live. And it's been really good to see the support continue to build for the show. So I really appreciate those who have been tuning in, and I'll see you next week on another episode of The Trainer's Hut. I'm Todd Blum. See you then.